Songs together first, and one of them is in your blue songbook, if you still have one. It's the words are it's on page 14 at the bottom. This is a could be another gathering rite that might be used for Pentecost. It's printed in With One Voice, the ELCA or the Augsburg Fortress resource, but we prefer really not to print the music, but we've printed the words there for your help, and maybe you can just repeat them after me. This is from Nigerian, it's the Yoruba language. The words are wa 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 emimimo.
Wa 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 emimimo.
Wa 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 alagbara.
Wa 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 alagbara.
Wa-o, wa-o, wa-o.
Wa-o, wa-o, wa-o.
Means come, Holy Spirit, come. It sounds like this.
Wa, 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 mi, mi, mo. Wa, 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 la, ba, da. Wa-o, wa-o, wa-o.
Wa.
Thank you.
gracious Lord, we thank you for this new day. We thank you for snow and for ice. We thank you for fellowship, friendship, new friendships and old friendships renewed. We thank you, gracious God, for the power of our beloved liturgy, for the rhythms of your life moving in our lives. Be with us this day as we open our mouths, as we send forth our breath to join yours, as we raise our voices together in song, praising you. Lord, listen to your children praying.
Leading the Community's Song, and this is just entitled Part One. And just to tell you up front that Part One is really going to be talking about the vocal part of leading the Community's Song and using our voices to do that. And then Part Two, which is tomorrow afternoon, is going to look more closely at the instrumental part of doing that, looking at an instrumental ensemble, how you might put them together and what their role is, and how they also help in leading the Community's Song. But we want to start our time by just debriefing corporately the last four songs. We sing four songs. The last four songs we sing, we started with Santo, Santo, and then we sang Wah, 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 E Mi, Mi, Mo, and then we sang Lord, Listen to Your Children Praying, and then we sang remember your servants, Lord, when you come into your kingdom. If you can just share off the top of your head what comes to you in kind of short phrases, how were we able as a group to learn those songs? I'm assuming that at least some of those were unfamiliar to you. If they were, how were you able to learn them? What was going on in your learning process? And what maybe helped or hindered you learn those songs? Anybody?
Yep. Confidence in the leaders.
Confidence. Did you have confidence in that one?
Just movement. Like in the last gospel, I can't sit still. I can't sit down. So I think movement helps me learn.
Thank you. Movement.
Songs.
Yep.
Short steps. And we learn a little bit, do that. A little bit more, do that.
Okay. No music in front of us.
That was helpful?
Mm-hmm. Yes. You have to listen.
Was it unhelpful for anybody?
Yeah.
Some people are uncomfortable with it, I imagine.
Well, I'm not, but speaking for people who are here.
Okay, but for some people it is helpful to not have that, okay? Forces you to listen. Who is next?
Simple melody.
A simple melody?
The power of the simplicity, I'm just reiterating, because it's so powerful, because it's simple.
Thank you. Beck?
Mary has really good articulation. I watched her lips.
Your directing style, by
yes,
yeah, as opposed to just the nice, but the help
pitch markation pitch as opposed to conducting.
Yes, okay.
You didn't tell us too much.
Mm-hmm. Oh. What would that have meant for you if we did? Would it have?
It would have taken away from the enjoyment of doing it on my own, with just what you did say, and then I could find my own way.
Your talking would have gotten in the way.
I think you're intimidated when there's too much talking. Am I going to do it right?
Call and response.
Okay.
Repetition.
Repetition.
Mm-hmm. Having a large enough group that if you're not sure of a certain note, somebody else will have it.
It's also a hindrance for me, being in a group of musicians. It's kind of unrealistic what happens so quickly here. Our expectations are going back in.
We'll talk a little bit about how you can train the group you have to be more confident in the same way that this group is.
Yeah.
Not only hearing the words, especially when we're singing a foreign language, but also to see the words written down.
Okay.
Remembering how different people learn, especially people who like to look at the words.
Well, I think we're done.
we're glad for you.
We're going to pass, maybe I'll just start talking when Mary passes out this sheet that we put together yesterday, compiled from some other things, and you can have this sheet.
You might have to share again with,
it's about 50 of them, I think. A congregation doesn't sing its own song just on its own. It takes some leadership, and there are some skills involved in leading the congregation in its song. And many of you have those people in your parish, or you are those people in your parish. As we split up yesterday and as you sent your response forms in, I know there's a number of people who have roles as organists or as other instrumentalists or as choir members or as cantors or song leaders in their parish. But we're going to begin concentrating on the role of the song leader, and the word that we're using increasingly as we go out and give workshops is the role of animator. I don't know how many people know that word or use that word in your parish. Anybody? This is comes from the French, and it's used widely in the World Council of Churches and other international church circles. But the person up front who would be leading the community in song would be called the animator, one who animates the worship, or one who brings it alive, gives inspiration to it. And we like that word a lot because it's descriptive of what a song leader should be doing to inspire the community's song. Do you want to say this?
Do
I learned from Mary that this is, how many of you have song leaders in your parish? Somebody who is assigned to that task who is not an instrumentalist but a vocalist. Anybody? One? Okay. Sort of? Yeah, you've done it. I've seen you do that. In the realm of contemporary and traditional, is a song leader contemporary or traditional?
Yes.
Thank you.
Yes?
Yes was the answer.
I assume you mean both. It's true. You want to talk about the roots of it a little bit? I mean, yeah, I learned from Mary that in her tradition, it's very old.
Well, in the Norwegian Lutheran tradition, there was a person called a klokker. And that person, which would be typical also, I think, from my limited studies of the early, maybe early European and American Jewish tradition with the cantor, that person is often more like what we would call a deacon or someone who also knows how to pray. In the Norwegian tradition, it would probably be someone with a loud voice, because the point was, without any amplification, to be able to lead a new song that was unfamiliar to the congregation. They might just stand up somewhere in front, off to the side, and sing with gusto, the way you've seen us do, maybe one time through a verse, and then invite the people to join. That person, in some parishes, as opposed to being a really fancy job, would maybe also lead the people in prayer, and then probably did other things like counted the offering and maybe swept and got the books. And so that role has had a lot of different parts to the job description before, and I don't think it's important necessarily to think of how fancy that might be, but just to think about what the real role of that people is, and that's to lead the people in prayer through song.
In North Norway, in Korgen, my great-grandfather was the klokker, and when he died, they had to buy an organ.
Oh, that's a wonderful story. May I steal that story from you? Thank you.
Now, we can obviously go back much earlier than that, but you know, I maybe rely on Marty to say, what were the role of those people like in the early, as much as we know about the earlier church?
Well, the cantor, as much as we know, I think that there was indication that psalms were sung responsorially, even early on. And cantillation was not quite singing, not quite speech. It was heightened speech with a note pattern to say this is words that are special, are important. It's kind of hard, like the first couple of centuries when Paul says songs, hymns, and inspired songs, and you have to go more by the culture than by the Christian writings are for the first couple of centuries. But in many, I always fall back on looking at oral culture today and assuming that oral cultures have a lot in common in terms of the way music making happens, and interactive singing is a major part of most oral cultures.
No, we're going to dive right into this song leading sheet.
Yeah, I want to say, just sort of reiterate that it's not anything new. I think one of the things that becomes confusing is that in some ways it is new, because in some contemporary worship services, oftentimes there is a singer or a ensemble or a band up front that is leading music, and sometimes that is a little bit of a different thing than what we're talking about. And I think we want to talk today about the difference between being an animator and a song leader and a performer in a group, which is something that is being taught in some circles in the church, to perform for a congregation. And it's pretty different than what we were talking about last night and this morning, that church then becomes something that we come to and sit in theater seats and watch a performance of, rather than becoming participants of and feeling that rhythm. Do you want to say something, Susan?
Stones, I mean that the role of the assistant minister in the Lutheran liturgy could very easily include this role. This is the lay person whose task it is to evoke and lead the prayer of the people, who evokes the Kyrie, who leads the psalm, and who could very I could see that, and I think it happens at Holden, where the assisting minister becomes, if you will, the corker.
Yeah, and it happens both ways. Sometimes, depending on the person's gifts, that if that isn't that person's gift, then we have another person that plays that role. But if it is the person's gift, it's much more natural for them to take over.
Susan was suggesting that the assistant minister, I don't know if you all caught that, could easily play that role. And we're imagining two things. One is that you'll watch us do a lot of this, and that's how you'll see what we think is the role of the song leader and how we do it. And the other thing is that having helped a lot of different groups or talked to a lot of different groups about this in Bread for the Journey with Tom and in my own parish, I also know that for a lot of you, and when Tom asked people to raise their hands, there's no one doing this at all now. So the even thought of starting it, like who it would be, how would they get started doing this with your parish, is the biggest question in your mind. How would we ever start suddenly having a song leader from not having had one for many, many years? And we will talk about that.
Now, one way you can do that, find out what it's like, is if you just go and somehow disconnect or unplug your organ for one Sunday, and the congregation is somehow forced to sing a cappella, you'll find out maybe who are the best singers in your community. And then you approach them, and they perhaps can play that role. But I also want to make sure that we're not organ bashing here, because organ is a song leading instrument. And you all know that there are really great organists who lead song really well, and there are not so great organists who sometimes inhibit the singing of the congregation. But the goal is the same of the vocal song leader and the organist or the guitarist or any other song leader, is to help the assembly sing better and to help them find their song. So we're just talking about one aspect of it right now.
When Tom, yeah.
Sorry to interrupt. My title at church is leader of the public song.
Wow,
which is
great.
Really cool. I can't remember the author of the book. Te Deum.
By.
I can't remember who
Westermeyer. What? Paul Westermeyer.
Paul Westermeyer. Another book of his. That's where that came from, and it talks about what that means, and it's cantor / leader of the public song, and that's really what our goal is. And for me, it's from the organ and from the piano, because I'm doing both, as you know, as well as leading. But I find it has been an absolutely wonderful transition for the congregation after not having that, you know, ever done with them, to start in that position was very natural.
Just to have that name.
Just to have that name, and that people kind of expected, okay, well, what's this going to be? You know, what do you do? And just jumped in and did it. And it works. It's working.
Thanks.
Excellent. When Tom said, you know, unplug the organ or don't use it for a week and find out who's the best singer, just to clarify, which we have on our sheet here, and we'll just start looking at these briefly one by one here. Best singer doesn't necessarily mean what some of us might think from if you're trained in classical singing. Number one says, believe in your God-given voice and the voices of others and enjoy the sound of the congregation's voice raised in song. The best singer for song leading might well be a lesser trained vocal type person, but it might be someone who uses a lot of enthusiasm, who has a clear, plain voice, and who actually really does love to hear the congregation sing.
Do you want to talk a little bit more about how you believe in your God-given voice? And how many of you have a congregation where you don't feel they sing very well? Or that the congregation itself doesn't think that they can sing very well? How does that happen?
Are you asking that, or is that?
Well, I'm asking that, or you can tell them. But I think people know why don't people sing well, or don't feel like they sing well?
Somebody's told them that once.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Like a choir director when you were young, that said, "Stand in the back and mouth the words."
Lack of leadership.
Pardon? Lack of leadership.
Lack of leadership.
Right.
Their faces are just kind of planted in the book, and maybe they're unfamiliar, and they're kind of trying to follow the notes, but they hardly even make any sort of sound when they're singing, and it's buried.
Yeah, we could have led wah, 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 you mean me like this. We have a new song today, and I know it's kind of pitched high. I've only done it once before, and I don't know if we'll make it through, but bear with me here. Does that make me feel confident that this song is going to make it?
I would say also that public singing is countercultural. When else do we sing out loud in public with people? So I think that's kind of a hindrance. The church is... Okay, the Star Spangled
Banner. No, but if you're talking...
That's
the churches, of course, Star Spangled Banner.
Yeah, even the Star Spangled Banner is...
Nobody sings anymore,
really. ...sung so loudly on the over PA system that you can't... It's not a communal song at that point. And the other thing is that I think hinders people is I think singing together is very intimate. You're sitting here behind Paul Lundberg, who's got this absolutely stunning deep bass voice, and makes me shiver. And I think, okay, is it good to sit behind Paul Lundberg? I mean, I think it draws people together, and there's a kind of, there's this, not, I don't want to use the word boundary, but it pulls you together, and there's a part of us that says, how close do I want to be to these people? And do I really just want to sing in a space big enough that I'm the only one who can hear it?
Marty talked about being vulnerable when you're song leading and raise your arms and assume that something's going to happen when you invite people in. And that same thing is true when you open your mouth to sing, is that there's a way that you open yourself. And we were talking earlier about how when you really add your breath to your voice, and when you make sure that your body is also involved in what you're doing, that's a way of being vulnerable just to yourself, physically, and then to others, to let them witness that and hear that and be a part of it.
I've had the privilege of traveling a lot, as you heard yesterday, to Southern Africa, and I'm just always struck at how much that whole society sings together. Kids sing, and boys don't stop singing when they reach 10 or 11. They keep singing, even when they're in gangs. They're singing together, and it's really quite incredible. And now to see radios and CD players and top U.S. 40 hits invading Southern Africa culture, I fear for them because my fear is that they'll stop singing. I think I heard this from Marty, that there's no culture that is exposed to more music than the U.S., but there's also no culture that sings less together than the U.S. Is that basically what
that's,
you said?
That's my self analysis.
And if you think about schools and...
Can I ask you a question?
Yeah.
When you said that in South Africa that people sing like that, I mean, this is really unofficial and it's probably just sort of an impression, but do you think that has... forms or expresses or both a different sense of connection?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, do you see that manifested in people in the way they relate to each other when, apart from...
Sure, and the more they become an urban, fast-paced, developed society, I fear that they'll lose that. But it comes out of being... singing in community. I mean, when you come to a church, everyone's walking to church, first of all. And so they're there for a really long time. They have nothing else to do all day. And they sing for about an hour together at church. And then they have church. And then they sing for another hour. And then they're singing in their communities. And a lot of times the songs that they sing in church are the songs that they sing in their communities during the week. And those are interchangeable. So there's much less of a division between...
One thing I noticed when someone, a soloist, sings a national anthem is near the end of it, the crowd will start to roar. And what I experience is that they want to make an expression, and they have been suppressed by the person singing the solo. And the only thing they have left is this sort of soundless roar. You know, the only option they have.
One down here and up.
I'm wondering on your experience in Africa about the differences between the traditional Lutheran church in America, where we go through the liturgical seasons and we sing a powerful hymn every once in a while, but a lot of times we sing three or four hymns and we're trying to dovetail with the text that we sing once a year and nobody knows them and they're in a minor key and their heart, you just can't get into the music as well as that maybe some of these powerful simple hymns that I hear you using from Africa. And I reflect as teaching elementary school kids when I used to teach them God Bless America or My Country 'Tis of Thee, and by 3 or 4 weeks it was powerful because the kids learned a melody, it was simple, and they loved it.
Well, simple is one thing, but I've also been to the last church I went to in South Africa was a Presbyterian church, and they probably sang 17 hymns in one service, all different, and all with multiple verses. Most people didn't have books, and they knew them by heart. And they weren't, I mean, they were hymns that we would have had in our hymnals, but different harmonies, and they would have sung them in four-part harmony. They just knew them. So maybe they didn't have 150, but in that service they sang at least 17. And so I'm sure it's necessarily the complicated part about it, but
I bet they hear those hymns a lot.
Yeah. They probably do.
Repetition.
They sing them outside of the church. Yeah.
There's another.
Yeah. Getting back to the previous conversation, I know there have been psychological studies done that people singing in group singing does something physically and psychologically to them, and it's good for healing. You know, that's another thing that we've gotten away from without having people singing together. It's some deal with your brain and your body.
I lost my hair.
Well, what Susan said, I think, is the most important point that is the umbrella for all of this, and that is that in our culture, public singing together is counterculture. And we're talking about other cultures where it is part of the rhythm of life, so that you don't feel vulnerable, maybe in the same way that we do, because you've been doing it every day for many, many years. But it does, the thing that we all know about living in the U.S. is that maybe the greatest evil that we encounter on a daily basis is isolation. Isolation is not only a part of most of our lives, but it's actually glorified. Independence, isolation, words like that for our culture. And what you're bringing up, to me, I think is crucial, that together we are created to be in family. And when we are taught that we have as much space as we want and we can be alone and that that's good, there's a part of us internally, physically, psychically, spiritually, that becomes ill. And when Marty said about quoting Soa from Ghana, that artists help to remember people back into the family, what we do together now, counterculturally, is a way that we heal and remember and join together. And Patricia, you had something.
Actually, it fit in really well with comment four, the last one, in talking about how we don't have so much of a shared background of all the same songs anymore. I mean, I feel like we just even have, in our culture, have lost a lot of the traditional American folk songs that we grew up in grade school learning. And as Tom was saying, it's not necessarily how complicated or how simple the song is, it's that we know it. We are comfortable with what we know, and as Marty said, it's repetition. And I think it's wonderful to have all this music to choose from, and it's great to have something different all the time. But for people like me who take a long time to learn something and feel comfortable with it, the idea of having like maybe one piece of music that you repeat week after week for a while, with the rest of it being different, is a big help, because then at least you have one piece you're familiar with instead of struggling every week to learn something new.
Well, we're going to talk. An example of that is My Country Visit Thee. I bet everybody in this room can sing that from heart. Right now.
One verse.
One verse. We sang together, though, Spirit of the Living God, without any words. There are still a few, and some of them, interestingly enough, I think, are more of the kind of camp, church, folk, tune songs that we remember together.
We're going to get to that. That's a really good point. We're going to cover that. But I'm just going to skip down here to number 11, because we've been talking about closeness. I refuse now to talk about leading the community song without talking about space, and I know we're going to talk about that Thursday, but again, John Bell, we keep throwing this name out, but John Bell is a Presbyterian minister in Scotland and part of the Iona community, so if you've seen anything from Iona, he's a name connected with. He does workshops on liturgy and music, but John Bell says, if you are sitting more than 3 feet away from someone else, you can't sing with them. That you're really singing on your own. You might hear them in a distance, but you need to be sitting close together. And I think before you even try to get a group to sing together, you need to look at how they're sitting together. If we had been in a huge sanctuary with all of us sitting separately, we would not have been able to do the songs that we did earlier today. And that is a vulnerable thing. People sitting close to one another. They don't want to do it. You do have to find tricks, Amy, of getting people to move up to the front. And we do have these banners we carry around with us everywhere we go. We block off the back half of the church with colorful banners and make people uncomfortable.
Can I tell my Our Savior's story? Because I'm a church musician at a little Lutheran church in Minneapolis near downtown that's been going for 125 years. It was in a big stone building for 85 years, and then the building burned completely, except for the stone outside structure. It was just an electrical fire or old wiring or whatever. And that was in 1995, just before Christmas. We moved down the street to the Lutheran Social Service building, a just modern, flat, long building, into a room actually much like this, about this size, too. The sanctuary we were in that burned seated 600 people. And the room we're in now seats 100. And the congregation worshiping is somewhere between 80 and 150. So now we do two services because if we tried to put everybody in there at once, we can't fit. But the singing improved so greatly. I mean, I have a hard time now not going out on these workshops and saying to people, burn down your church and get into a small space. However, now for Lent, what we've often done is to go to the Swedish Lutheran Church down the street and join them in their giant sanctuary. I went there last week. And we were talking about this earlier, Leon, you said this. I got out the ropes and I started tying them about 12 rows down the pew because I knew that there were going to be 50 people for our Wednesday evening Lenten service. So I thought, you know, all we need are three pews. And a man from that church, not my parish, came up to me and said, "What do you think you're doing?" And I said, "Well, we're just 50 of us, so we just need these many pews up front." And he said, "We never do that here." And I feel so strongly about this, like Tom does, that I had a crisis moment in my heart. And I stood before him and realized that part of me wanted to punch him. And that thanks to the grace of God, I went with the other part, which I humbled myself before him. And I said, "My congregation has been in this little room singing together now for 3 years, and we don't know how to be that far apart anymore." I mean, I really felt strongly about it. It was like it would be too lonesome. I wasn't going to stand up and lead a song to four people, you know, that were 20 pews away. And he was so stunned by my comment. I just said, "We have to be close together. My congregation has to sit by each other." He just was speechless. And so I just kept roping him. So, however, I went back the next week and the ropes were gone. They had burned them or hit them or something.
Well, I'll take one more. We're not going to talk a lot about space because there is another time to talk about that.
I think that's a really important point. You gave him your mental map of why this was important rather than thinking about tricking. Mm-hmm. And I think when we're going to do stuff that's powerful and that invites people into intimacy that scares the hell out of them, we have to also invite them to think in some new ways about why we would do this.
Yeah.
And this is, I think, incumbent on us to be the hospitable guest host, inviting them in gradually. Mm-hmm. And if they've been sitting, I've got one guy that sits in the last pew in the last corner and he's been sitting there for 40 years. What do I think I'm doing if I'm going to take that away from them without graciously, gently sort of tickling it?
Yes.
And I'd be glad if you just would move one.
Yes. Maybe slow. The progression may be slow. Well, we've gone, you know, we're not going very orderly here, Tom, for this J, if we're going to get into this JP thing. One, two, three, four.
Well, number three. I don't want to.
Just say J.
Number three, we're obviously leading things with voice, and maybe we should sing again now, but this is a big fallacy that adding more instruments into the mix will somehow help the congregation learn the song better. And I don't know very many instances where that's true. If the congregation can't sing it with a lone voice singing it out or very minimal instrumentation, I'm not sure they're going to sing it any better with a ton of instrumentation. So we tend to keep that light at the very beginning and add as we go on after people have learned the song. But again, this cuts against some of the kind of praise band mentality that you sort of put a big sound out there my experience of that is that that reminds people of this whole idea of performance, that they're here to hear performance, and then you can just see their voices backing off and saying, I'm going to listen to this because this sounds great, but they don't feel invited into it. So we have to find some way of making sure that our job is to invite people in.
Can we just breeze through here and then do Katie Sudeikis before
you
do? Using number 4 to use a plain and clear singing style, you've obviously heard that or heard the difference between that. If you'd never heard Spirit of the Living God and then I'd sung Spirit of the Living God, fall fresh on me, and then put my hands out to you. Now what?
So don't use
don't ever sing like that kind of thing.
If that's your best voice, don't use that voice. You can be an average. I consider myself to have a very average voice, and people can follow my leading. I actually told this to John Bell once. I just said, you kind of have a average voice, and he was very complimented that I said that, because I said I can follow you and I don't feel intimidated. And I find when I lead groups, they a lot of times will join in because they feel sorry for me. You know? So just have to get out there and, like Marnie said, make a fool of yourself. Susan's nodding. She's been with me in committee.
Then we go on to making use of your hands to mark pitch changes, and you mentioned it, so thank you. You can see the difference then between, as someone was saying, if we were going to go Spirit of the Living God, that's directing the beats like a choir director would do or an orchestra director. But instead, if nobody had heard that before and you did Spirit of the Living, and it takes a little bit of practice because you may have seen people do it better or worse. You can sometimes make two big motions and sometimes they're small and indistinguishable. So practice, if you're going to do this, practice on someone who will give you some feedback.
And the farther away you are from somebody, the bigger the motion. Mary and I disagree about this, is what she's saying, is because I make bigger motions, she makes smaller ones, and we kind of disagree about that. Huh?
You're a bigger person.
But the farther you are away from someone, you should make them bigger. I mean, if it's a close group, you should make them smaller. But we are a visual society, and some people really can learn better that way. And you can do a whole song without even doing any notes. Just go.
Amazing grace.
One thing real quick. What I appreciate about what you do is you give enough direction, but you're very sensitive to when they've got it and you stop giving it to them.
That's the next
what
point.
Number is
quit. No, Marty, that's great. That's what you said before. We said before too, is to quit. And the other thing I would say, which we'll talk about choirs, I hope,
14,
if we've got
14.
Yeah. 14 is quitting, right. Once the song is being sung, and it may be appropriate for you not only to quit making motions, but to actually blend back into the assembly so that you don't have to stand there and be waving.
And this is the one of the most difficult parts about animating worship, is knowing when you need to be up front and knowing when you need to disappear. And especially for you who are choir directors playing both roles, it is a different role than directing the choir. You shouldn't treat a congregation as though they are a choir, because they're different. And I'm not sure what the difference between a choir and a congregation is. I think a congregation holds pitch better than a choir. I think.
Now you're going to get yourself in
trouble. Yeah, I will.
You're working on it.
I think most people in choir read music. I think most people in the congregation don't read music very well.
Have you heard John explain why a congregation holds pitch better? Hmm. Some people actually go sharp, and some people go flat, and on the average, they stay on the It's true.
All right. Yeah.
But isn't that a really good thing to keep in mind when you have your leader? Because it doesn't seem like the quality of the song leader's voice is so important, but pitch is, because otherwise you will drive the musicians crazy.
Yeah.
And that has to be there, I think.
I think that's a good point. And to me, I forget to mention it because it's a given for me that if you're using a plain voice, which means relatively small vibrato, and then you're giving very clear instructions, that you're also singing on pitch. And that's a good point.
You mentioned number 7. We're skipping around so much. Number 6, clear instructions. again, our arm gestures, Marty did that this morning, it makes you vulnerable, but it's very obvious that what is meant is for you to join in. In this community now, every Sunday we do a psalm, and the person stands up and says, "Psalm." Last Sunday was Psalm 23, sang a refrain, went like this, and everyone sings it back. You can train a congregation to do that. This community does it automatically now when someone sings a line, they will sing it back. Not. I don't know if all your congregations do that automatically, but it doesn't take very long to train a group to do that.
When I started at Our Saviors, they hadn't done very much lately. Well, they had done some, but of this just singing together and learning new things. And this is why you want a song leader who's friendly, hospitable, enthusiastic, and then maybe my next most important quality that I don't know if we wrote anywhere on here, persistent. And that means that even if you raise your arms, well, that's what you said, Marty, is that the people in your Catholic church didn't necessarily at first do anything. So you do it again. And what I remember saying to my congregation at Our Saviors is, when I put my arms like this, it means now you sing. And you just tell them what you're doing exactly. And then, as Tom mentioned before, don't accompany people. Let it fall apart. Be vulnerable enough to let it fall apart. And then start again. And think of either new ways to do it or just do it again.
You have to know songs really well. And this is part of praying with the community and having the song come out of your own heart. And if you're always behind a music stand, and Mary and I are now, that communicates something. It's a barrier. And if you know a song by heart, that's one less barrier, and people know that the song is coming from you. And it's much easier to teach a song that you know well than one that you're struggling with yourself. So just practice over and over and over again. In your shower is the best place, or with somebody that's not threatening.
And symbolically, if you're asking them to sing without music,
right,
you've got music. Mm-hmm. It's setting up an unfair situation.
So sing Kirisugi for us.
All right, let's just do a song. Kirisu to no hei wa ga watashi tachi no kokoro no sumizumi ni mare yuki watarimasu yo ni.
Everybody. She said, what does it mean? What else was wrong?
I was looking at music too long. I was looking, you weren't. We didn't know the words. Did anybody even know the language? Guess? Yes.
Japanese.
Hey, lovely. Okay, let's do this now in a better way. In your blue song books on page 9, at the bottom of the page, this passing, a good passing of the peace song from Japan. The paraphrase translation of it you see there. May the peace of Christ prevail in every corner of our hearts. We'll go through the language first, if you'd repeat after me. Kirisuto no hei wa.
Kirisuto no hei wa.
Ga watashi tachi no.
Ga watashi tachi no.
Kokoro no.
Kokoro no.
Sumizumi ni made.
Sumizumi ni made.
Yuki wa tarimasu.
Yuki wa tarimasu.
Yoni.
Yoni.
Now, when a person is speaking this in Japanese, it sounds different. But as with several languages around the world, when you are singing it, the vowel sounds are more like what we just did. So now we'll go with the tune and the words, just line by line, if you'd repeat after me. Kirisuto no hei wa.
Kirisuto no hei wa.
Ga watashi tachi no kokoro no.
Ga watashi tachi.
Sumizumi because that's usually an easier way to sing something new. We'll sing through the whole thing together.
Epiphany, but we spent Epiphany not hugging each other, but passing the peace with our hands like this, like many people in the world honor one another by putting their hands together and bowing to one another. And as we did that, we sang the word peace in three languages. First, shalom.
Shalom. Shalom.
The second is sawidi.
Saudi.
That's an indigenous language from Paraguay. And the last is Spanish, La Paz.
La Paz.
Shalom, Saudi, La Paz.
Shalom, Saudi, La Paz.
There's two lines. The first one is Shalom, Saudi, La Paz.
Shalom, Saudi, La Paz.
The second line is Shalom, Saudi, La Paz.
Shalom, Saudi, La Paz.
So the two lines.
Shalom, Saudi, La Paz. Shalom, Saudi, La Paz.
Now we can stand and pass the peace to each other in this way, with the men beginning and the women coming in. Mary,
on the second half.
Men.
Shalom, Saudi, La Paz. Shalom, Saudi, La Paz. Shalom, Saudi, La Paz. Shalom, Saudi, La Paz.
Sections. As you do the song more yourself, you might discover what the better manageable sections are. Like when I taught you Kirisuto, when I went through the first time or whenever it was, I just left Yoni off there on the end by itself. And as we did it, I thought to myself, well, that was all right, but probably it makes more sense to do that whole phrase together. So don't put too much pressure on yourself. Just practice it a couple times. Or like I always say, which is really good, if you've got a willing family or group of friends or a small community like this, you can try a lot of things and make mistakes and learn from that.
Before we go to the back side of the sheet, which is sort of the how often and when, I want to talk a little bit about number 13, which has to do with the choir. And to see very clearly the choir as a tool for song leading. My understanding, and I think this was from Paul Westermeyer, somebody mentioned him earlier, is that the original role of the choir, and perhaps the most important role of the choir, is to be that group which has a chance to rehearse beforehand for the purpose of helping the assembly sing better and to sing some things in parts that the assembly can't sing without rehearsal. But the entire purpose is for them to lead the community in song. And I don't know how well that clicks with your choir and your congregation and whether they see that as their primary role. But I think if we approach choirs that way, they can become a tremendous instrument for song leading. Now, being Lutheran as a Reformation, as I understand it, that choirs originally were that group that took away the song from the community at some point, and that the community, in order for the community not to be singing heretical songs, I guess, and what Martin Luther did was restore that back to the community. And so our understanding of the choir is not that the choir takes that music away, but helps the whole congregation sing it.
On Sunday night, I told Tom, I was sitting in the direct center of the room, and the choir, who had practiced earlier, was sitting on one side of me, and the rest of our regular winter community, or most of our winter community, was on the other side. And it wasn't the choir that I heard, it was our community sounding really good, and I'm an untrained musician, so it was amazing for me to see that power of a group that has practiced before evoking what is there already in the community. I wish everyone could have sat in that center seat for a moment and heard
that's
that.
That's what's supposed to happen.
I didn't know that until Tom told me that's what's supposed to happen.
That can happen even if your choir isn't sitting together. And one strategy is really to sometimes not have choirs sitting together and spread them out amidst the congregation. Teach them some things that are happening in the service and then have them be leaven in the moments.
And hearkening back to the youth, what do we do about the them? I have a choir of teen girls at Our Savior's, and they used to be really disruptive during worship, as teenagers can be, or they're young teens. And when I told them that their role as a choir was to lead the congregation in the worship service, wow, did they straighten up? They were just, I just helped to bestow on them this kind of, you know, ministerial role for them. And now they really act that way. They were given the go-ahead and the blessing, and it made a huge difference.
The other thing that Mary does with her choir is she teaches them, I don't know how many songs you know now, your choir, teaches them songs that the choir themselves can start without any prompting during communion. So Mary can go up to communion and her choir will start a song and lead it while she's at communion. Is that right? Or do individuals take that responsibility?
If they know.
So, again, it's empowering them into a new role, and it's I see it as reinforcing this whole thing that Marty and Susan talked about being dialogical, that the choir often sings back and forth with the congregation, rather than the choir simply being seen as that group that sings the anthem at some point in the service as a performance piece, which again sets up this audience performer kind of dynamic.
And you've got to remember again how counterculture we're being, because for so many churches, the higher church musicians are the professionals, they're the trained professionals. And as you know, some of those people take that role very seriously and assume that means that they're the ones who produce the music and lead it and are always in that role. And more, even though I've been trained in some of those same ways, more and more I see myself as the leader of the public song. And what that means is to evoke. Sometimes I think that the pinnacle of my career at Our Savior's Lutheran Church will be when I disappear, and that the choir can take their role seriously and everybody's doing what they do and the entire assembly is worshiping together.
Before we go on, do you want to say anything, Marty, as someone who you write primarily for the congregation and not for choirs, but a lot of composers write more for the choir than for the congregation. I mean, what are the dynamics there?
On Friday, I want to talk more about, you know, some things about that.
Okay.
I look at it, the difference between doing a painting or crafting a really good chair. You can make a chair that's like a work of art, but you have to sit in it. And I found that Lutherans the, one of the great strengths is a powerful sense of the word and how music can convey the word, and especially in the hymn. But I don't think Lutherans have traditionally, at least until recently, been aware of how musical form affects ecclesiology. A call and response reshapes the idea of what church is when you dialogue. And we're aware of, you know, the Lord be with you and also with you. But when that happens musically, it really changes ecclesiology, especially when there's a dynamic with a choir of voice and the assistant minister of voice in the congregation.
But what that means is thinking about a whole new genre of choir music that is significantly different from a lot of the choir music that we're seeing.
And the choir isn't a lesser voice. It is right. One of the voices in this whole wonderful mm-hmm. conversation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Michelle Schock, who's a folk musician, talked to what we're talking about, not directly, but she said that music is way too important to be left to the professionals.
Thank you.
I just wanted to punctuate the youth choir idea. I facilitate the youth choir at my church, and not only did they move from sort of disruption to involvement, they physically moved from the balcony to the second pew. Nobody sits in the first pew, but they're in the second pew. They are physically right there.
Oh, I'm glad you said that. I've just been thinking about moving my youth choir right up front, too. I think that's a
bad. I didn't tell them to. They did.
Oh, they did it.
They're right there.
Excellent. Should we get to this bit?
Yeah, one more.
Is there a place, then, for special music that the choir does?
Good question.
Yeah, I think so. We're going to talk about this a little bit during worship planning in terms of how to pick a piece of music. But I think it, again, has to do with the flow of the liturgy and where is the liturgy going and what does that piece of music do to the liturgy? Does it move it along or does it stop it? And we can talk more about that in tomorrow morning's session on worship planning. Unless, again, you want
well,
to say more.
I
don't do much with choir. So
I would say what I've really tried to do is get rid of that moniker completely. I would never call anything I did during worship special music. Because to me that, suddenly as I was looking at the liturgy more and more, it's meaningless. Special to what? I mean,
yeah, applies to everything else is not special.
Exactly, right. And so if the choir sings a piece by itself, which is what we mean by special music, then the choir sings an anthem. You know, you can call it an anthem or another hymn like that. See where that then becomes appropriate in the liturgy, if indeed there is a place for it. And oftentimes there is.
And maybe, Martha, you can talk about the role of just instrumental music by itself as part of the liturgy.
I think in the second session, we're also going to talk about the space mm-hmm. and the microphones and just the whole experience of music making.
Okay.
And the ensemble is one of that, but I think there's all these elements.
Yeah. On the back side of your sheet is when and how often. We won't spend too much time on this, but Marty's already talked about how he takes time at the beginning of the service, and that's extremely important, is to carve that space out for yourselves as musicians and as song leaders, as animators. You need that space, even if it means sacrificing an organ prelude and instead calling it gathering music or musical preparation somewhere. You need time to teach the assembly, or at least to get them, as Marty says, one peep out of them before the service starts so that they've at least sung something or abused their voices. And that's also the time in which you can say something like about Kirisuto no Haiwa, or Shalom Sawiri, or background of a song. That's the appropriate time to do it, and not to interrupt the flow of the service in the middle. Either by tuning your guitar or training somebody or teaching a song or telling about it, that really has an interrupting feel to it.
I'm thinking
coming out principles.
Oh, okay.
How often? Somebody raised this early on. Mary and I go out a lot introducing new music, so it seems like we're singing things once a lot. And it's sort of frustrating. It's nice to be here singing things over and over again. We've tried to do something seasonally here so that for the four Sundays in Advent, we're singing the same gospel acclamation that I think we'll close with. So that a congregation begins to get to know that song. And then it becomes their song. if you only do it once, there's no opportunity for doing that, and you just make people feel uncomfortable every Sunday if you introduce something new every Sunday.
Well, it's kind of counterculture for, like we've been talking about, sort of what you might call a high church, fancy musicians, well-trained, lots of, you know, resources and things. Then I think we get into, as music directors or whatever, we get into our own head, oh, we did that before, we can't do that. We got to do something new. We're always trying to do something new and something different. And remembering that even though your congregation might, if you've been doing that, they might assume, oh, we have to have new music all the time, that somewhere deep within us, just like how we want to be close together, we want to really know how to sing something from our heart. So if you take the risk, if you haven't been repeating something often in your congregation, do it like Tom suggested. Use a liturgical season and repeat it. If you think you need to be fancy somehow, or actually to make it be interesting, this can also be a really good thing, just do it slightly differently each week. Add a bell. Start with the choir. Add the congregation the next Sunday. Start with a soloist. Put it, you know, put it in a different part of the room. The song, bring it in as you come. There's many ways to think about that in your liturgy.
If you could turn to page 16 in your blue song, we'll end with this song from Korea. During Advent here, Susan, how do we use this? I guess this was our gathering rite. And the first Sunday of Advent we sang verse 1, and the second Sunday we sang verse 1 and 2. And third Sunday, 3 verses, fourth Sunday, 4 verses. And we also use it as our gospel acclamation, using each verse as the acclamation for each Sunday in Advent. This song can also be used as a prayer response. It can be used during a confession of sins. It can be used during communion. But the background in it, I think, is really important to know that this song was written for a gathering, and I think it was the first gathering between Christians of North and South Korea. And the Korean word, as I understand it, used here for reconciliation would be the same word they would use when thinking about reunification. And so it has really a double meaning for those people, not only the reconciliation that Christ brings, but also the reconciliation needed between broken people and nations divided. So we sing this song this morning remembering all those places around the world, Korea and Kosovo and Bosnia and other parts around the world where there is brokenness, and we pray for reunification and reconciliation.
I'll start off by singing it in Korean, one verse, and then we'll sing the 4 verses in English. For many tunes from Asia, you would only sing one line together with no harmonies, and that would be more appropriate, like we sang Kiri Suto. This, however, Gyeongyong Lee is a living person now. This is a contemporary song, and that person, who I'm not sure if it's a man or a woman, is trained in European harmonies, and so harmonized it in such a way that it actually sounds beautiful, both just the melody and in 4 parts. So let's sing verses 1 and 2 just on the melody, and then if you can read and want to, we'll go to the SATB on verses 3 and 4.